So hello, everybody. I'm Carla Wise, and I started this effort just about 6 months ago. I've been a co-leader of a chapter in Corvallis, Oregon for about 3 or 4 years. And I'm also liaison to our very left-leaning member of Congress. So I just felt there was a need within CCL to do better messaging and outreach to progressives, both in Congress and in the community at large. So that's really where this effort comes from. So next slide. You might wonder why we would need to do this. Most of us are already left-leaning in this organization. So although we say we're nonpartisan, this is what 2016, what CCL volunteers self-identified as. 80% of us said we were left of center. And yet, we have a problem, I would say, with progressives. I think the reason that we have a problem is that we've spent a lot of time focusing on how to convince conservatives that carbon pricing is the right way to go, which has been an important thing to do, and we're good at it. But I think that what tends to happen is that we forget how those messages that we've been working so hard to perfect sound to people on the left. So we sort of believed that the left would just fall in line, I think, once we got the right to embrace this. But what we're discovering is that that is actually not the case. It ain't necessarily so. We saw some real evidence of that in Washington State, which is right next door to me, last year when the left many on the left were extremely skeptical of a revenue neutral carbon fee that was proposed for the state. And we sometimes have trouble with our, I would say, with our lobby meetings with our left-leaning members of Congress. I know our chapter has. So we also have some true ideological differences that tend to come up sometimes. I think as CCLers, we tend to think that the first and most important thing is climate and getting the climate under control. And we find that that's not always the case with many folks on the left who are not within CCL. So we really need to do a better job with the left if we're going to succeed at getting a fair and effective price on carbon. So that's why we're doing this. We may, many of us, be left-leaning, but we're still, I would say, lagging behind. So there are three things I hope to do tonight. The first is I want to talk a little bit about differences in sort of the moral landscape of liberals versus conservatives. Many of you may be familiar with the work of Jonathan Haidt. I want to just refresh your memory on that. Then I want to talk a little bit about lessons and best practices, what works with those on the left. I've borrowed shamelessly from a number of CCLers that have said things to me or written down things in progressive outreach. And I've also used some of my own experiences. And then lastly, I've got a few bonus materials at the end after we do a little Q&A. Common stumbling blocks, trusted validators on the left. And then I want to end with talking a little bit about those who really seek out change and those who try to avoid it at all costs. Okay, so this is a book that I don't know, I actually haven't read the whole book, but I've been to a number of CCL talks where we talk about the work that Jonathan Haidt has done on the principles of moral psychology and the difference between liberals and conservatives. And his basic foundation is that morality tends to differ between for those on the left and on the right. And I wanted to mention here that if you haven't read the book and if you are interested in exploring this more, there's a TED talk that he did called The Moral Roots of Liberals and Conservatives. And I really recommend that you take a look at it. It's only 20 minutes and it sort of summarizes his whole point. So he talks about six moral foundations that guide us in our sense of what's right and what's wrong. And the important point here is that while many of the 1 through 4 tend to be very important for those on the right of the political spectrum, those on the left really only care, and this is a gross generalization, but they really only care about 5 and 6, about fairness and reciprocity, and about care versus harm. So I just recommend that you keep this in mind when you're talking to a liberal or a progressive, either member of Congress or audience, because much of our effort has been to use language and ideas that appeal to some of these earlier 1 through 4s. And this is really a turnoff to many liberals. So anyway, I just hope you'll refresh your thought. If you're speaking with liberal groups, this is a really good thing to go back to. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about lessons and best practices. And I want to just mention the people that I've stolen ideas from. Danny Richter, Madeline Pera, Peter Joseph, Bob Norris, Jim Rhein, Edric Geis, Ron Rothbart, Marty Roach, Dick Smith, and Peter Brin. These are all CCLers who have either given talks or written things or spoken things that were really helpful in sort of thinking about what works best with liberals. So thank you to all of you. So the first thing, and this is really from Peter Brin and also from Mark Reynolds, is that first impressions are really, really important in whether we're believed and listened to. And we decide very early when we meet someone intuitively how we feel about them. Mark Reynolds has said many times that the messenger is often more important than the message. And I'm not trying to intimidate you about how you present yourself. I'm just saying that if you're going to see a progressive audience, it's really worth thinking about how you're going to introduce yourself with things about you that will appeal to the progressive people that you're meeting. So next slide, please. Oh, okay, let me just say one more thing. Go back, I'm sorry. When I first heard this idea that CCL has about presenting yourself in a way that your audience is gonna believe, I thought that it meant you had to fake, you know, try to be fake, and that's not true at all. I don't mean that. I mean that when you don't try to be someone you're not, but think about how to make yourself relatable to your audience. And for me, that's pretty easy because I am one of those 80% of CCLers who really is quite left-leaning. And so I can use a lot of true things about me to introduce myself that are appealing to people if they have similar values. You know, for example, you know, I can talk about the fact that I first became really involved and committed to CCL when I really realized that the very most vulnerable among us were going to be the people who were going to suffer and perhaps die because of climate change. And I just couldn't live with that. You know, that care harm idea is very important to me. And so, you know, just pointing out something about yourself that you feel strongly about is a really good way to start. Okay. So this show relentless optimism. when you're talking to progressives, you have to assume that they feel bad about climate change. That's generally true. And they need hope. They need a feeling that there's something worth doing and that some progress is possible. And I believe this is needed in every venue that you are going to interact with anybody. Next slide. So with your member of Congress and their staffers, I'm sure those of you with Democrats know that have experienced this too. Democrats are frustrated and demoralized. That was true before the election. It's probably times 20 now. As Madeline has really helped me to see, they're often unaware of anything good conservatives are doing. We think our members are aware of what's going on the other side of the aisle, and honestly, all they're aware of is the stuff that they don't like. So I've been able to do a lot of good in our office just by sharing the information about the Climate Solutions Caucus, sharing information, you know, anonymous information about how good some of our meetings are going with Republicans. It's really changed the feeling in there when we go and see them. And then now we have the Climate Leadership Council that we can talk about. And so there, you know, this is a real important focus area, I think, of what we need to do with our liberal congressional staffers. In the venue that you might be in where you're doing outreach and giving talks, the same thing. People really crave good news and ways to engage. This is pretty straightforward, and it's kind of the CCL way anyway, but I think, you know, it's hard to overemphasize how much this matters. When I go into an outreach event or a talk with a positive spin, I inevitably get positivity back and people are interested. And if I'm having one of those bad days and I just don't feel that, it's a completely different experience. So I really think that's important. With our chapters, for those of you who are group leaders, or even if you're just go to the meetings, I think, you know, now more than ever, we really need to build each other up and to take actions and to, I think liberals and progressives really, really need a place that where they're not just gonna be complaining to each other. And I've honestly gotten a little bit strict in a way that I'm not that always that comfortable with, of really sort of changing the subject and limiting the ability of people in at our meetings to go on and on about things that are bad and they can't change. And I've found this to be a really effective strategy. next slide. So I feel like our best way to engage with progressives is to focus on the fact that carbon fee and dividend is a progressive proposal. And I really think that you should use data. You should use the data we have because it's good data and it's convincing. And it, you know, that's been my experience. Next slide. This is from the household impact study. This graph shows how, you've probably all seen it before, but it shows how the lowest income quintile has by far, you know, a much, much, much smaller carbon footprint than the top 2% or the fifth quintile. So their boost from their carbon dividend is going to be significantly positive, whereas it's really only the fifth quintile, the top 2%, and the fourth that may be putting in more money than they're getting back. So this data, I believe, is available on a district level, and there's also similar kinds of stuff from the REMI study, and I just don't think you can overutilize this when talking to progressives. So, you know, that fairness and caring values are, you know, pretty universally agreed upon along the left. So the more you can sort of listen to the concerns of progressives about revenue neutrality and about the plan, but then also make a way to share exactly what the impact of carbon fee and dividend is on the lower income quintiles, I think it's the most effective way I've found. Go ahead. Okay. So use the REMI and the household impact study, and you know, I wouldn't try to convince people that it does a perfect job, because it doesn't, but it does a pretty good job. And then look at the impacts in your congressional district, because that's really important, and it's really cool that we have that on a district by district basis. And I have to say, our meeting with our member, when we showed the staffers that, went really well. So because the left values fairness and caring for the most vulnerable, consider the following. The phrase net progressive effect is one that we really like when we're talking about this in our chapter. And then sometimes it's upsetting to progressives sometimes when they hear that Bill Gates is going to get a dividend along with everybody else. But another way of effectively, I think, communicating about it, this is that if we share the dividend equally, then most Americans, particularly low and middle income, will break even or come out ahead. That's why the monthly dividend is so important. This isn't going to convince all progressives, but it does really help, I've found, with a lot of people. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about language, because it's something I've been really thinking about a lot since starting the Progressive Outreach Team. The language that we use is really quite powerful, even when we're not thinking about it. And I think in CCL, we've done a lot of sort of unconscious using of the term market-friendly, market-based. That's not language that tends to go over well with a lot of progressives. And I want to just talk about what I found to be some better terms to use with progressives. First of all households is a much more likely to sound good to progressives than American households. Again, we're inclusive. corrective to the market is a much more progressive friendly wording than market-based, market-friendly, free market. So that's another one, and it's also true. Another way to describe our proposal is equal incentive for everyone to be carbon virtuous. Let's see what's next. I like this one a lot, because I find that that using the word transformative on a rising carbon fee is something that that's not upsetting to progressives. And really, if the fee continues to rise, it will be transformative. We all know that. We tend to not say that to conservative audiences, because it tends to be more, they don't like that kind of thinking, but I like that, using that with progressive groups. And then this is one, I think, that I feel pretty strongly about, and I think it appeals to a lot of progressive people. Lowest income people will suffer the most from climate change, so they have the most to gain from swift transformative of carbon pricing. I think when you talk about the slowness of any other approach than a rapidly rising carbon fee and dividend, you have to talk about the slowness of reducing emissions and the slowness of actually getting climate change under control and how and who's going to be harmed by that. Okay, so next I want to talk about, next one, thanks. Okay, this is another thing that's, this is particularly from Danny Richter, who really taught me this. It's really important not to dismiss the Clean Power Plan when you're talking to progressive audiences, progressive members of Congress, progressive groups of any kind. Many of people, you know, left of center worked very, very hard for the Clean Power Plan and have no interest in hearing it dismissed or no interest in hearing that it didn't really do much or that it's fine if it goes away. It's just not a good way to talk to liberals. So let's see. This is just a summary of what I've just talked about. Becoming a trusted messenger, talk about, you know, what brought you to CCL or what your particular caring is, and do it right up front. Show relentless optimism, focus on the progressive nature of carbon fee and dividend on income. Be careful of your language, and don't reject the Clean Power Plan. This is just a very quick start to some things that I've learned from other CCLers and from working with my liberal group, but okay. So before I move on to the special things, I want to give people a chance to ask questions or make comments.
Great. So why don't you take a breath there for just a second, Carla? A lot of talking there. I'll give you a second to catch your breath. Maybe let's get a sip of water and let you guys know if you have questions or comments about the material that Carla's just reviewed. You can press the little microphone icon next to you, or it's on your screen, to unmute yourself, or you *6 on your phone. Please say your name and ask your question or give your comment.
This is Peter, and I just was wondering if you've ever been talking to a left-leaning environmental group particularly, and what messaging you've found to have worked especially well in that context.
An environmental group in particular who doesn't, a group that doesn't have a focus on climate, is that?
Like if you were talking to like a 350 chapter or something.
Okay. That's a very specific environmental group. And in fact, I have talked to our 350 chapter, and what I've found works best with them, because the folks in 350, I don't know if you've experienced this, but they tend to be a little bit different than the folks in CCL, and they tend to be much more interested in protesting and direct action and much more skeptical that anything can happen in the government. And what I have done is two things. One is I've shown appreciation to them for their work and their commitment to climate action. I think one of the things that different climate groups don't do enough is appreciate each other for our piece of it. So that to me has gone a long way, because they tend to be a little bit skeptical. You know, why aren't you out in the streets demonstrating, you know, and why? So I found that when I just say, I really appreciate that you're committed to action just like I am, and I have a different approach and a different way of doing it, but I think we're all on the same team. We all want a livable climate. And then I try to share with them the positive things that I'm finding, because I think that, you know, that showing relentless optimism thing is really critical for everybody in environmental groups. And then the last thing is, you know, just allowing it to be okay if they don't agree with everything that we're doing. Was that helpful?
No, that's very helpful. That's good. And just kind of following up on that, what has been your rhetoric when talking about how CF and D fits into the types of actions that they're working on, pipeline resistance, for instance?
Well, I mean, you know, I've tried to say that that a price on carbon is critical to any, you know, yes, it's important to stop building fossil fuel infrastructure. And again, I show appreciation, but I also say, you know, a price on carbon will only help speed up those efforts. So I try to sort of show that what we're doing and what they're doing is compatible, and that it takes all kinds. I really find that's the best way.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Thank you, Peter, appreciate that. Julie typed in the comments section, you know, their 350 group, they talk about investment in carbon fee and dividends like a 1-2 like economic incentive to the fossil fuel industry, or she says economic punch. If I'm here in Texas, I'm going to say economic incentive. because, you know, we're definitely, you know, in Texas, it's different, obviously, than it is in California. We don't have any progressive members of Congress down here. All right. So we still have time for a few more questions before we move on to the next section. If you guys have questions, again, press the microphone symbol next to your on your screen or star 6 on your phone and tell us your name, please.
Carlo, this is Walt. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Walt from where?
Portland, Oregon.
Okay. Go ahead, Walt.
Hi, Walt.
Hi, Carla. So your slides are excellent. I'm hoping they're going to be available on CCL Community as a resource.
Yes.
Okay, good. question, as you know, in Oregon, we're dealing with a movement that wants to make sure that dividends are invested in renewable energy and are given primarily to projects that benefit low-income people. So can you expand on how to use the transformative aspect of carbon fee and dividend to deal with those two arguments?
What I can say is that this is a very delicate dance that we are dancing in Oregon. For those of you who don't know, you know, we've got, as probably some other states do, we've got some folks working to put a cap or a price on carbon, and then at the state level and
invest.
And as you probably also know, CCL has come up with a 4-point sort of, what's the right word? 4 points that state level plans have to meet in order for CCL to say they're supporting it. I guess what I'm trying to do is with my chapter and with the folks who are working for Oregon pricing, is I'm trying to just point out the fact that you know, it's very different on the state level. We can't implement a straight carbon tax here because of the way that our state constitution is written. There's all kinds of restrictions, and that we don't really know yet exactly whether the whole invest plan that Oregon has is going to meet the 4 criteria for what CCL would pass, but that if people want to support it on their own, they should support it. I, you know, I feel like a lot of the difference, and this has taken me 4 years to learn, but I feel like a lot of the difference between like people who are really committed to this progressive idea that the money has to only go to investing in renewables and helping low income people versus CCL's plan, which is like it goes back to everybody, is partly an us versus them thing. And the more I can just say, you know, I want anything that's going to stabilize the climate and not harm, you know, the people who need to be protected, and not get into arguments over the details, the better.
Follow-up question. Where are these 4 points that you mentioned for endorsing state initiatives? Are there somewhere on the CCL community?
Ricky, can you talk about where those came from and where they are?
Well, they're not published because they're really not finalized yet. But basically, while they are, you know, it needs to be clear, transparent, equitable, you know, just it's really like principles of price and carbon. Yeah, more so than the actual policy like carbon fee and dividend. And so they're still working on it. There's an action team, Walt, and community state level carbon taxes. Tony Cerna, who's one of our IT folks as well, he's sort of been tasked to head up this entire project, so you could reach out to him. But I know we haven't published like what we would support because, it, like, as Carla mentioned, it's you know, different states have different guidelines, and it's you know, I guess we'll make a decision. We're not going to be the ones leading the charge at the state level, but if a bill proposal comes out from another organization, we'll take a look at it. We'll say, okay, yeah, that meets the principles. Then we'll throw our weight or support behind it. And that's sort of, I think, how it's working out. But the state level carbon team should be able to help you out with that.
Well, I feel like in Portland, you folks have been communicating a little bit with Danny about whether the proposal here does meet the criteria. So I feel like there's been some communication, but you can check in with me later also, Walt, if you want to talk more about it.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Walt. Okay, Walt. And you know what? I've got a question. I actually have one that came up while I was thinking about all this. Squaring, or I guess circling back to using some of the dividends for other purposes other than a full revenue return.
Yeah.
Generally, tried to help folks on the progressive side see that if you were to do that, then that just disadvantages the poor even more, right? If you're taking money out, and if you are doing an equal return, then that would harm them more, right? But I guess what you're saying is that some of the state levels, it's more of an us versus them, so maybe it's not an equal return, and some of it's in being invested. Is that what you're saying?
Well, there's a lot of objections that come up about what to do with the revenue from the left. I mean, part of it is some people object to it being revenue neutral, period. You know, that just it shouldn't all go back. It should be used both to protect the poor and also to invest in renewable energy projects or to do this or to do that. And so there's definitely resistance to revenue neutrality, period, from some on the left. But then there's also resistance to the idea that it should be targeted to anyone besides people who are particularly vulnerable.
Okay. So we got, it's about 20 till. So why don't we go ahead and finish up with the rest of this, and then we can take more questions at the end questions. So I want you.
Okay. Just a few more slides. This is the bonus material portion. Okay. I just wanted to bring these things up. They're not, they're actually not really anything. They're just a few thoughts. I wanted to just mention a few stumbling blocks, gross generalizations about progressives and stumbling blocks. And I don't have the answers to these. I just am telling you that in my experience, these have been kind of good to know about. Many progressives don't trust markets, period. They just don't trust markets to to do the right thing, even with the carbon price. And as I just said, many are against revenue neutrality. They think the revenue should be kept and done good things with. And then for next week, there's going to be an environmental justice webinar, and some in the progressive community align with frontline communities who have experienced environmental racism and feel very strongly that climate solutions must directly address environmental justice. This is one of the issues that came up in Washington State, and this, if you're interested in this aspect, you should really go to be at the webinar next week. I don't know if you all have been in meetings, but I've certainly been in meetings where it's like they want nuclear power off the table, period. That's pretty common among progressives. CCL is agnostic about that. And then this is really, really common in my experience. They just believe that working with Republicans is impossible. So, we're tilting at windmills. So those are some things that I've come up against that I just want to point out to you. And then concern about the rural poor. The rural poor one is one place where sometimes Republicans and Democrats are both concerned about the rural poor. So this is kind of an interesting one. I want to point out to you that CCL's most famous spokespeople are mostly conservatives. This is a big problem in winning over the left. If you're giving a talk or doing any kind of outreach with progressive members of Congress or progressive groups, use someone that the left admires. Next slide. We have President Obama saying we have to price carbon. We have the Pope Francis, basically saying the same thing. Only when he's really making a case for pricing carbon. So these are really good people to cite when you're talking to liberals. And then we also have something else that we never use, which is that I don't know, 9 different or 10. Let's see. Different bills have been introduced by Democrats and a few Republicans to price carbon. So we have some very trusted validators, Bernie Sanders, Barbara Boxer, all these people have tried to price carbon. So this is important for us to use. And then finally, I just wanted to end with this. And this is something, if you watch the TED Talk, this really interests me. Conservatives in general are change averse, and liberals in general seek out new experiences. Of course, another gross generalization. But when we describe carbon fee and dividend as a simple, fair solution that will essentially leave everything as it is, except to transition us away from greenhouse gas emissions, think about how that sounds to people who are seeking new experiences or who want change. And then just think about how you want to present it. Okay, that's the end.
All right, thanks, Carla. So we, I'll give you just a moment to take a sip of water. And, I thought that part about the, we have tons of validators. We have validators who have, there are tons of validators on the left, right? There are folks, all the carbon pricing bills that have ever been introduced, with the exception of one, have, all been, led by a Democrat. So that is a point that I'm sure I'm going to take away from tonight. I appreciate you sort of driving that point home for us. So again, if you guys have questions, you can press the microphone icon next to your name, on the screen. God, I still say that after 2 years of not using that old system. Or press *6 on your phone. Tell us your name and shout out your question.
This is Kathy. I got a question that I guess is not trusting the market, but I was asked, well, how do you know that the money for investment is going to move towards renewables, because that's what I said was going to happen. Mm-hmm. As the price goes up. And the only answer I can think of was, well, we have modeling to show that. But do we have any other data or evidence?
So your question is, you got a question basically saying, how do you know it's going to work? How do you know that putting this price on carbon is going to actually make, you know, more renewable energy and less carbon-based energy? Was that the question?
Yes.
So that is essentially not really trusting or understanding how markets work. You know, because if you have the price that continues to rise, then it's sending a signal that eventually we're moving away from the point where it's affordable to burn fossil fuels and to the point where it's affordable to use just renewables. And so that's a market process that will inevitably follow from steadily rising prices on fossil fuels. Now, you know, there's debate about how high the price has to go before fossil fuels are uneconomical, but there's really no economist who would say if the fee keeps going up that we're going to keep burning fossil fuels. Eventually that price is just going to be too high. So it is, but I think, you know, a lot of people are not that interested in or familiar with basic economics. And I think people on the left in particular, and I'm guilty of this myself, tend to kind of go, ew, I don't want to think about economics. But it is just a simple fact that as something gets too expensive, you stop using it. And this is even more compelling as the price of putting renewable energy online continues to fall. So we do have models that show it, but it's also, I think it just goes into that. I think you need to just explain in a really simple way how and why that is. And I've done that in talks, and you know, sometimes it takes a while for people to kind of grasp it.
You know, I think that there might be, and just this is Ricky, Kathy, there may be some data buried in the British Columbia experiment as well, that shows the correlation that I think that you're referring to. I don't have it off the top of my head, but I remember reading through that once. And you know, that's always a great data point that I point to. A lot of people go, oh, what's your proof? Well, there is one place where this has worked in the past, and I usually will point them to that. So maybe, Kathy, maybe we could look some of that information up, and maybe that will help validate your argument just a little bit more.
What this person was looking for, I felt, was like a reference that, you know, a validated somebody that they would believe in. Economists was a turnoff word, you know, like the market is. So I want to get better at explaining that.
Yeah, I'm definitely in agreement with you. So why don't we, maybe what we can do is, Carla, as part of the progressive team, we can look up the information from British Columbia and see, you know, exactly, you know, what the data point there is. So we don't have to have trust in markets. We can see what actually happened.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks,
Kathy. Appreciate that.
So I think there's one more slide that I just, can you go one, what oh, is it, one more that shows my contact info?
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to say, not forget to say that if you're interested in doing more about in progressive outreach, please join the team on CCL Community. And if you need anything or need to contact me, that's my email address. But also, I really, really would love some help with this team. If you're motivated to work more on how CCL works with progressives and you want to be involved in some way, I could really use you. Just had to say that.
Well, that's the beauty of CCL. We people find something that we're missing, or we're maybe not as good at as we should be, and someone steps up, and then they decide to lead, and then they become a subject matter expert in it, and people join, and that's what makes this organization so fantastic. So I'm sure there's some folks on the line tonight who, if they're not already part of this, the Progressive Outreach team will be looking to join. Did someone else have a question or comment?
Yeah, this is Ron in Houston, Ron Dries. And I'd like to give, I guess, a negative example of the market working. For several years now, we've had relatively low gasoline prices. I say relatively low because when I was growing up, gasoline was 37 cents a gallon. Lately, Ford Motor Company, which was planning to build an auto plant in Mexico, canceled the plant because the demand for small cars has declined too much. And it's declined because gasoline has gotten cheap and people can afford to drive bigger vehicles, or so they think. So here's an example of the market working, not the way we want, but still responding to the price of gasoline.
Yep, absolutely.
Thank you, Ron, appreciate that point. And Alfred says in the chat, I guess also in response to or trying to help answer that question a little bit more, you know, that corporations are driven by profit and shareholders, and they will use or change investment strategies once renewables become profitable. And although this, I'm sure this does not help with the progressive audience, when we speak to conservatives here, we have a lot of oil and gas people in our chapters in Texas, and they will tell you that a lot of these folks in their last years, a lot of these folks are retired now, in their last years, they were working on lots and lots of renewable projects, and they're ready to go just as soon as they become cost effective. And
Right. They're
on the shelf, but they just can't make any money off of them right now.
Right.
And as the price gets higher, those projects become more profitable and easier to do. So I don't know if that really works for a progressive audience. Maybe it does. But it's the truth, which is really reassuring to me. I'm not an oil and gas person, but it was really reassuring when I heard that from a lot of folks who had recently retired from the industry. Yeah. Any other questions, comments for Carla tonight? All right. Well, maybe I'll throw this one out there. Maybe I just ask people. I'm sorry, Carl, I'm not letting you off this easy. What if people out there, when you have spoken with other progressives, what has been something that you have struggled to explain, or maybe something that they've brought up to you that you just thought was hard to explain about carbon fee and dividend? Or maybe something you overlooked. You know, because I'll tell you, and this is what I'm getting to, is like I had a conversation with someone at a outreach event, and I was so used to talking about markets and how we use the market to correct everything. And I talked to her for about 5-10 minutes, and she just looked at me after a while and she goes, you know, you really didn't talk about how this would be really good for the climate. You know, all you talked about was this was good for the economy. And I was just like, oh my gosh, I didn't do that. So, you know, maybe even like what, you know, when we're, I'm just so used to people when they come out and talk in Texas to me that they are, you know, conservative that I don't even ask the types of questions I should be asking to figure out what their political leaning is, so I can sort of try to find common ground. How can you do that in a way that, you know, doesn't seem inauthentic, you know? I'm asking you or anybody else.
are you asking me?
Yeah, I'm asking you.
Oh, okay. Anybody. Sorry, I was.
No.
Well, so, you know, I can only say that I've almost always spoken with left-leaning groups, and it's only a matter of how left-leaning they are, and so I've gotten kind of used to that, but I would say that I'm just beginning to learn to try to actually assess if I've got a different kind of audience there. And I don't have a good answer for you at all, because I actually walked into a group that I thought, the one time I really flopped in a talk was that I'd given one talk to a bunch of really liberal folks, and one of them had come up to me asked me to come talk to his lunch group, and I went. And it was a completely different crowd. And I was talking to them as if they were progressives, and they weren't. And they were completely stony-faced silent after I was finished. And so, I mean, you can definitely say it wrong, and you can, and you know, there, I mean, I think if I were gonna say one final message is, we are not neutral the way we think we are, as CCL does not use totally neutral language. And so I think the most important thing to do is be aware of that and just think about who you might be talking to and what language you're using, and that will help.